My first thought was when I read this first page and that quote about too many women regard marriage as a career, whereas it's only a relationship. How sad is that statement? I had a professor a long time ago who said, "You may call me doctor or missus. I worked equally hard for both titles." And I thought that was such a good approach to her life. She understood the importance of that home life. Everything revolves around that. I'm convinced you can't have a happy anything else if your home isn't working the way it needs to work. And ladies, we're a big part of that. You know, we're to be keepers at home. We're the ones that are supposed to make that environment be as it should. So to say that it's only a relationship, I think, is such a downgrade of what God told us being a wife and mother and keeper at home is. So having said that, you have to talk about how can we do that? How are we different from our husbands? How are we similar in that we're Christians and we're working toward the same goal? But as unpopular as it is in the world today, women were made for men. Now, people do not like to hear that. Try saying that on a public street and see what you get.
But, maybe not.
Maybe not. But it is what the Bible teaches us. Mm-hmm. And the women that allow themselves to resent that lose such a glorious piece of life. If we can read and understand how God set it up and glory in that rather than trying to be something we're not. You know, it's like those little kid stories of the pig that wants to be a cow and the cow that wants to be a goose, and it doesn't work. There's all kinds of reasons. Go ahead.
I would venture to go a little further than that and say any time we go against or kick against what God has set up, we lose the glory in the role we were created for. It's like when I was a young wife, I resented that husbands could make the rules and boss the wife around. Mm-hmm. I had one that enjoyed that very much. Mm-hmm. And I resented it. And I kicked against God for it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the longer I kicked, the worse it got.
Right.
When I finally got it and submitted to God,
right,
and submitted to my husband, things got better. And it wasn't doing it to make him get better. It was doing it to
because
submit to God that finally did it.
Yeah.
And it's the same in everything God set up.
Sure it is. If you're the child and you kick against the authority of your parents, it's not going to be in your best interest. It's not.
But you know, if we can go back, and it's hard for young people, of course, because they don't have experience and knowledge. But if you can go back before you take a husband and kind of pick one out that you don't mind being obedient to him. Mm-hmm.
Well, having been in the situation I was in before, when Roger and I decided to marry, I asked him and I said, "Tell me, here's my major worry. Everything else is okay. Tell me that I won't regret saying that I'll live in submission to you. Because that's what I'm going to do. But tell me I won't regret that decision. That my personal human side won't regret that." And he said to me, "We will, of course, lead life the way God said." He said, "But I find it hard to imagine us in any situation where you have to submit to my will simply because I said you have to." He said, I respect you, I admire you, I want your opinion. He said, "If we get to an impasse," he said, "but I can't imagine that there will be many times in our lives that it will be because I said we're going to do this." And that was good.
And I think that was God's intention.
I do too.
If a man loves his wife as the church,
right,
there's not going to be too many times I have found, especially where he says, "Well,
this is it, regardless."
Exactly.
No. And God tells us that that's how it has to be if a decision has to be made like that. But he teaches to husbands, love the wife as Christ loved the church. Love her as your own body. Love and live in peace and understanding with her.
Which means he's going to consult her, see what she thinks.
Right.
Talk about major decisions together.
Right. And of course, each individual marriage handles that in whatever way they handle it. But I think that it's very difficult, particularly when you're young and are just learning who you are, because I know the feeling well, to acknowledge that you don't have to be right every time, that you don't have to have the last word. That's a real hard one for me.
And you know, it's real nice, really, not to have to make all those decisions.
It absolutely is. You just have to be older sometimes to figure that one out. Say, whoops, sorry, this one's yours.
Well, there's nothing like becoming a widow that teaches you that.
Yeah.
You know, I became a widow at 29 and went from making no decisions in our household to having to suddenly make them all.
For you and children.
Right. And I learned to appreciate the man's role in a way I never had before.
It's a huge responsibility.
And realize the pressure of making the right decisions that is on a man. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. And my husband had been very good at making very good, very quick decisions. And I would labor over them for weeks before I would finally feel like, okay, I think I made the right decision.
And sometimes you don't have weeks to do
that. Exactly. But, I mean, early on, it was every decision I made was very stressful. It took me a long time to be sure it was the right thing.
So, there's a place for us designed by God, which is, of course, always in our best interest. Always. Because he loves us. He's our Father. He made it where it's for us. Does that mean it's always easy? No. There are circumstances that can make it difficult. There are men who can make it difficult. Timing, all those things. Come in. We're happy to have you. It's all right. Here's the book. Right there. We're on page 24. Okay. Let's go to page 24 and talk about that little paragraph where it says, "You never talk to me." Now, women generally, and I'm doing a lot of generalization in this lesson, but women generally are more communicative. They talk more than men, as a rule. But that doesn't mean men don't communicate. Sometimes we don't listen the way we need to listen to hear what a man has to say. And because he often won't say it in words. His actions, his mood, his body language may give us more information than his words. And it says, "Have you ever envied a couple in which the husband was extremely attentive and loving in public and shocked to hear that they were getting a divorce?" Well, I like to think we're shocked to hear anybody's getting a divorce, but what about the man who doesn't speak a lot? But, well, let me just use the example of my father. My dad's not a big talker, but everything he ever did that I could see, even as a child and as a grown-up, was for his family. He was a very difficult man to buy any gifts for. He didn't play golf. He didn't go hunting. He didn't fish. He wanted to be with his family. That's what he did, which is a great thing, except it's real hard to buy a Christmas present for somebody who doesn't have any hobbies.
I remember a little incident one time. He was still in the Navy, and some of the guys were going to go bowling and invite him to go. And I said, "Well, why don't you go?" He said, "I didn't get married to go bowling with the guys."
But he was not the kind of father who spent his days telling me he loved me. He didn't say those words all the time. He did say them on appropriate occasions, but it wasn't what he did. But everything I needed, I had. And I was cared for, and I knew I could go to him about anything that I wanted to. And he still didn't speak much. One time I went to complain about my mother when I was about 16. And I said, "She makes me so mad." He was reading the paper, and I'll never forget, he pulled the paper down. He said, "First of all, we don't refer to your mother as she. Secondly, if you have a problem with your mother, I think you need to discuss it with her." Yeah, so much for getting him on my side. That didn't work out. So we need to acknowledge that just because a man isn't speaking the words, and sometimes that's frustrating for women, because we like to hear the words. I mean, I'm willing to punch him and say, tell me you love me. And he says, I love you. And see, I just need to hear the words. It's okay. But a lot of women resent it, and they want to give little hints and clues, and then they want to be mad because he didn't say it. Well, he doesn't know he's supposed to say it. He's busy fixing your car, so you're not stuck on the side of the road. For better or for worse, I think that's kind of where y'all left off when you were doing it before. One of the most important things a successful wife communicates to her husband is the treasured gift of acceptance. And I like the next sentence. It's not the I'll smile if it kills me kind of acceptance. It's real acceptance. Amy, would you read Proverbs 21, 9 and 19, please? And Mother, would you go to Philippians 4, 8? I think one of the things we do forget, like she's saying here, is that our husbands don't have to be perfect. Because if they are, then surely we should be. And that's pretty hard. Would you read that, Amy, in Proverbs?
It is better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. It is better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman.
Oh, my. It's kind of like the worst things he could think of. The corner of a rooftop than to live with a woman that makes you crazy. Or out in the desert land. Okay, Mother, would you read the Philippians?
Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, and whatever is a good report, if there is any excellence, if there is any excellence, if anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things.
Okay, so these two passages tell us a whole lot of things about how we're supposed to communicate with our husbands. One is, don't be a nag. Don't be contentious. Don't look for things to be irritated about. Now, as Amy said, early widowhood, but singleness in a lot of ways can teach you these things. I know that there was a time in my life when somebody throwing socks on the floor just made me crazy. It's the hamper's just right there. And I'm telling you, I see socks on the floor now, and I say, I get to live with Roger. And I'm a happy camper, and I'll pick them up. Nothing's changed about the scenario. Socks are still on the floor. But it's changed in here because, you know, that old saying, don't sweat the small stuff, and most of it is small stuff. You have to know when it's important enough to say, I have a problem, I have an issue, and I need to talk about this. So that constant vexing can really, and you know, think about when your kids were two. Mom, 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 why, mom, why? And you just want to scream because it's constant. And sometimes we have a tendency to do that, even though we may not do it 3 minutes in a row, if we say it every evening or every week. It can become vexing, and it can cause people to shut down and not hear what you're saying anyway. And the next part of it is, let's think about the good things. We married them for a reason. Did all of those reasons evaporate? Surely not. I really, really dislike being with a group of women who want to spend their time talking about how irritated they are with their husbands. That is not to say that we are not sometimes irritated with any person that we love. But as an ongoing thing, and have y'all ever been in those groups where they just start going, you know, he did this and he did, he watches sports all the time, he never helps with the kids anymore. And I'm thinking, you picked him. He must be a really lousy picker if he's that bad. And I think the idea of what we hear in Philippians of think on the good things, tell yourself the good things, remind yourself of the good things, is a way for us to get along better with everybody in the world, but particularly those that we're closest to. I keep going back to personal examples, and y'all can bring your own in when you're tired of hearing mine. Roger, as you all know, is a really laid-back kind of guy, very easygoing, things just don't ruffle him very much. Now, that has two sides. That means we are almost always the last person to get on a plane once they call for boarding, because he's going to amble through the airport and look in this shop and that shop. And my little type A personality doesn't do that. Yeah, I want to be, before the plane's there, I'm there. Maybe before the station people are there, I'm there.
She spends 4 hours at the airport.
I'd like to be early at the airport. And he's very, very casual. He says, well, they'll call again. Oh, my goodness, I'm going to have a stroke before we get there. But and it makes me crazy, that lack of time frame. And I just want y'all to know, if we're ever late to church, it's not me. I want y'all to know that. But that lack of time thing indicates that very laid-back personality. And some of y'all already know this story. We've been married about a week, and he was living in Austin. I'm living up here. And I hit somebody in the parking lot at UTA. Fortunately, it was just kind of a little, very tiny little fender thing and didn't even cause any damage. But I had to call this man I just married and said, you know that new auto insurance you just put me on? Well, I have a claim. And not 3 days later, I have been doing electronic banking since it existed. I've been doing electronic banking for 30 years. Before anybody else was doing it, I was doing that. I don't miss payments. I know where things are. I keep it on my calendar. I missed a payment and overdrew my bank account. We hadn't had time to put our money together. We just married a week. 3 days after the accident, I've overdrawn the bank account. And he says, how much do you need? I'll put it in there. So all those laid back things that make me crazy because he won't come on are the same things that allow him to say, that's why we have insurance. How much money do you need? Don't worry about it. I think it's really, really, really important that we remember that most of our character traits exhibit two sides. And there's a good one and a bad one. The person that my sister wrote a hateful letter to Roger before we got married and said, here's what you need to know about Jean. And she was just saying she talks a lot. She was with people a lot. She didn't really say bad stuff. But he wrote back and said, so you're telling me she's eager to share information. She's eager to have friends. You know, he flipped it. He found the other side of the character trait. And that's kind of what taught me that whatever that trait is, there's usually another side that has a good point.
And she also told him if he hurt her sister, she'd break his kneecap.
Well, she did say that. We refer to it as the kneecap email.
And I'd just like to say for, I guess, Sarah, she's the only one here, but before you get, you know, once you're married and there, yes, that's a lot easier to do.
Yes.
But if there's something, if there's a red flag when you're dating or whatever, you
run.
Need to run. Especially if it's something, I mean, you don't go into a relationship and especially a marriage saying, I'm going to change this.
Oh, because you won't.
No, you don't.
People don't change. Once in a while, people change, but they change on their own through something that means a lot to them. They do not change for somebody else.
They
just don't.
There's something, I don't know where I read it, but it said, men get married and they want their wives to stay the same. Women get married and say, I'll change them.
Yep.
Spend their marriage trying to change them.
And you won't.
No.
And neither will we.
No.
And that's the other piece to remember. If what they're doing irritates you so much that you can barely stand it now, in 20 years you'll want to kill them for it, but you won't have changed. You won't have said, I can live with that. So when we think about changing husbands, we have to acknowledge we're not going to change much either. Now, with any luck, we all grow and make some changes, but we don't change our basic characters. So if you are involved with somebody who is unreliable or who tells lies or who cheats at anything, that's probably not going to change. It's not to say the power of the gospel can't change people and make them completely different, but it's rare. It's rare for that to change. So if you're dating someone, and Sarah, tell me if I'm wrong on this, because Roger and I were talking about it the other day. It seems to me, at least with my children, when I was in school, I could go to dinner with somebody and then it was fine, but we didn't have to go out again. You know, we said, okay, that was all right, but we're not going to do that again. And we were still friends and nothing changed. It seems to me that people lock in so quickly. You go to dinner and suddenly you're committed. I used to tell my girls, I would have a date with one guy on Friday night and one guy on Saturday night, a different guy. And they go, I can't believe you did that. And I said, I never told them I wouldn't, and they probably knew. It was a small school. Everybody knew everything about everybody. But That's not true anymore, right?
No, that's not true at all.
Yeah. You go out with somebody or walk around with somebody and suddenly you're with them and you can't break out of that. I think that's a very, very, very dangerous situation to be in, because this time of life is when you're picking and choosing. And how are you going to pick and choose if you don't see or be around anybody else? So
that's what I tried to tell my own daughters. First you need to know them as people.
Yes.
First you need to be friends, and then you go from there.
Yeah. And if you, when Roger and I were talking about this, I had seen somebody that I knew in high school, and I said, we had one date, Don and I, and he was a nice guy. We had a pretty nice time, and I guess he thought the same thing that I thought when I got home. You know, I'm not going to do that again. But when we see each other, we're happy to see each other. There's no big drama or trauma. It was just, okay, enough of that. And I think that's a much healthier way to get to know people.
I think today, everything that we live in an instant society, and kids, they want everything now. They want what the next person has now. Mm-hmm. You know, at this age, people are starting to get.
We're not talking about you.
No.
Generation.
Yeah. I've heard this lecture before, but
it's the truth. It is the truth.
Well, and I have a daughter too, Kaylee. You know, she was so. She had gone to Nacogdoches hoping to meet somebody, you know, and she almost didn't. She was so ready to come home. Several friends had got engaged since she had been there, and, you know, it's all, you know, she'd call and be happy, and then she was crying before we hung up. But you want that, and you want it now, you know, and it's hard to focus and to let God handle it, you know.
I told her, I said,
God has somebody for you.
Yeah.
You know, you need to focus on yourself.
You know, that whole like,
make you
like
that
God
top
thing.
20 list. I said, make a top 20 list of the man you want. And said, don't mess with these other guys or worry about it.
Well, and the other thing I think might be true, not with kids who grew up in a Christian home so much, but with the chaos in society that there is today, with the number of divorces and kids that aren't living with their parents and all, that they find a person that they are mildly attracted to and go, I've got to have this stability. I've got to stay here with this person. And I think that's part of the issue.
There
will never be anybody else, because they come from such an unstable background.
I don't like to put dampers on things, but part of the cause of this is the horrible world we're living in.
Oh, sure.
My children went to a horrible public school system. I mean, I know they're not all this bad, but we were in Daytona area, and the schools were very, very liberal, lots of homosexuality in the beach community, very horrible situation. And the way society has gotten, and I don't know if it's come here yet, but it's if a guy takes you out to dinner, you owe him to
with
him.
Yeah, it's here.
And if you don't sleep with him, you're a gold digger,
looking for a sugar daddy,
and all kinds of horrible things. And so you get a label, and then nobody wants to date you. And so girls have all this pressure to get involved in a very serious way very quickly. And that's what's at the root of it.
Well, I think that is part of the problem. I do think the instability of society is another one. But you're absolutely right. Linda, when you were dating, couldn't you just go on a date and then go home? I mean,
and in fact, that's what you were expected to do.
Right.
And you even held hands on the first date, and you were just...
Yeah. And the guys would poke a little bit, try a little bit, but they knew it wasn't going to happen.
It wasn't going to happen.
It wasn't like today. And I think the worst thing we've ever done as a society for our children is to change dating to sex. I think it's... And you see on TV shows, they say, well, third date is sex. Really?
Why?
Who made that rule? Where did that come from? So I think we've done a terrible, terrible disservice to our children by allowing that to happen.
Well, and it all starts very young. Of course, kids have to grow up a little bit sooner these days than they used to because of the AIDS epidemic. I mean, we have to talk, you know, if we don't tell them things, they're going to hear it at school. So, but younger and younger, we have these elementary kids getting cell phones and being allowed to do things that My kids didn't get a cell phone until they started driving.
Well, people kind of laugh about that whole cell phone thing. They don't understand the implication of that. The implication is these kids can make plans and talk and do things without any parental control if they have a cell phone. It's not, oh, you're 9 and you shouldn't be calling your friend at school. That's not what it's about.
It's not, this is for an emergency only. Don't use it unless it's... But when you keep... They get everything at a certain age. There's nothing to look forward to.
And it's the same thing as the computer in their room. Wimpy parents who scream, I don't know what he's doing back there. I can't help it.
Just pull the plug.
Making nuts.
Pull the plug. Yeah. But I think people lose track of what the real issue behind that is. Mm-hmm. It's not that I care if my kid's up there watching a sitcom or doing homework in the privacy of the room. I don't. That's not the issue. The issue is young children having access to things that none of us ever had access to, and people having access to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a dangerous situation. And they don't have the wherewithal yet, the knowledge, the understanding, the wisdom to deal with.
There was a talk show yesterday morning that was on, and it was just kind of background, but they were talking about cell phones and texting, mm-hmm. and the problems we're seeing these days with, like, even teenagers who are babysitting, they come over, and they're, or even young parents at the playground, they're on their
phone.
They're
watching their kids.
Yeah, and things happen.
Child care facilities have to have the teachers turn their phones in at the door, or they'll use them while they're on the playground watching kids.
Exactly.
That's policy in most child care facilities. Give me your phone. Because they don't have the wherewithal to say, oh, I'm supposed to be watching a 3-year-old, I shouldn't be texting. So, how do we get off that track?
Sorry.
That's all right. A word fitly spoken, as in Proverbs 11, can mean a lot to your marriage. And, you know, I think that's important that we stop and remember timing. It's very tempting if someone's in a bad mood to react in the same way. You know, they come in and they're kind of slamming things around. Maybe they haven't said anything. Maybe you can just tell. And our hackles get up a little bit because in a very arrogant, self-centered way, we start thinking they must be mad at me. Might not be about you at all. Sometimes it's not, you know. It's not always about us. But we tend to react in the same way. Well, if he's going to be that way, then I'm going to show him that I don't care. It's pretty fruitless. It doesn't help the situation at all. But to find the right time to say, is something wrong? Can I help with something? Did something happen at work? But maybe the moment they walk in the door is not the time to say, what is wrong with you? You know, maybe most of us, if we're having some struggles, can do better if we have a few minutes to work through it ourselves.
And that goes for...
I'm sorry. Do you have something more?
No, I'm just going to say a resolution I made the first of the year, and it has worked out well for me, is to be a more friendly, more positive person. Maybe you hadn't noticed.
I'm not going there. This is being recorded.
People I meet casually, somebody in the elevator just say good morning or whatever. And we were coming down in an elevator from the doctor's office one day, and there was a tall black man with us. Now, black had nothing to do with it, but a lot of times we don't speak.
Well, that is a descriptor.
And I don't know how we started the conversation, but we talked to him down the elevator and walked out the door with him in the front. And he waved goodbye and said, have a nice day. And have a nice day. It's just we need to put forth some effort to be a person.
Nicer. Be a nicer person. Debbie, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, and, you know, I had to learn this through the years, but when your husband comes through the door from a long day, the first thing he doesn't want to hear is, Jeremiah was horrible today, or whatever.
Kitchen faucet's dripping. What are you going to do about it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They need time to decompress.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt us to hold on to it just, you know, 30
right.
minutes more.
Right. That's right. And the truth is, if we think about it, we're that way too.
Exactly.
You've been out running errands all day. You've been to the store, and the bank, and the post office, and 15 other places, and it's 110 degrees. And you walk in, and somebody says, what's for dinner? The first thing I want to say is, nothing, or whatever you fix. But if I have a few minutes to regroup and cool off and put my groceries away, then, you know, then we can think about it. So most of us are the same way. We don't want to be hit with stuff if everything else is piled up on us.
I know, this is just my young and selfishness. But
it is fresh to us.
That's right, Sarah.
But how do you overcome, like, I mean, it's like all this stuff, like, I understand the way that it, which I've come to understand it, but at the same time I don't, is
putting it in practice is hard. Well,
we're having to do all the changing. If you really think about it all, like, we're having to do all the changing. How do you be okay with that? Because okay. It's just like, everything we're just saying, it's okay, just be okay with them doing that. Just be okay with it. Just okay.
And I totally understand what you're saying. Part of that is youth, because, you know, you're just learning who you are. And it's kind of important to you to be that person. But the other thing to remember is we're only studying wives here. We're not studying husbands today. They got plenty of things they have to do. Love your wife and live with her with understanding. Roger, I need this and this and this and this and this and this. And I know you're retired now, so you can do this. And I'm sure there are days that he's thinking, live with her with understanding. So you have to remember that we're focusing today on women, not on the men. The other thing is, it takes time and patience and practice. And you have to say to yourself, I want this to be a wonderful marriage because I married a wonderful man. What can I do to make that better? He'll have to do what he has to do. So I get it. I know what you're saying, but it really isn't all us. We're just not talking about them.
A big thing that helped me a lot was a woman that got put in touch with me who had been going through a bad marriage, and she was becoming a better person because of it. And she had some words of wisdom that she kept saying to me over and over in the conversation. And this stuck with me for life. You are not responsible for anyone else's behavior,
yep.
Just your own. You have to be able to look God in the eye at the end of your life and say, I did what you said. I kept my word. I was a good wife to my husband, no matter how he acted. And if you didn't do that, you're responsible for that.
Yeah.
You're not responsible for what he did. If you were a good wife and you did everything you were supposed to do and he abused that, he has to face God one day.
It doesn't mean you have to accept that.
Right. It doesn't
really
mean
doesn't.
Be a doormat. It doesn't mean
no,
let him walk all over you, but it means
right.
You're not responsible before God for his behavior.
And the truth of human nature is, if you spend your life attempting to change him, it will make you miserable because you won't get it done. And most people, not just men, most people will dig in their heels and refuse to change because you're pecking at them. And so the best thing you can do, again, is not to be harmed, you know, not to let yourself disappear as a person. But the Bible tells us, as much as is within us, live peaceably with all men.
He's not changing something now that's important to you. He's
I'm
never
not
going to
Blake.
Change.
I'm not referring to him. Just ask.
Okay, what's his last name so I can Google him?
You'll probably find two of him. His name is Blake Lambert.
We've got your back.
That's right. So, you know, it is hard. It is a hard thing sometimes, and it becomes easier if you have a loving, willing mate who wants to also do what God says. But even if you don't, we still, like Amy said, we still have a requirement. We're still going to stand before God. Because he didn't say, if you have a great husband, submit to him. That's why all of us talk so much about mate selection. That's why all of us say no before you marry him. Because marriage is for life. God doesn't say, if you don't like it, get out. And he doesn't say, if you have a bad one, you can get out. And he doesn't say, if you have a bad one, you can be rebellious. So,
and you have the choice before you get married.
And if anybody comes to you before you get married, you have to know that it takes a lot of courage to go to someone and say, "There's something about him.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I don't think he's good for you. Yeah. If someone's doing that, it's not because they don't want you to be happy.
No, it's and it's not because they want that you feels to be happy. For them to say that.
And I had to learn that lesson the hard way.
You know, Kate broke an engagement. And she did it after much thought and prayer and consideration. And she didn't, it wasn't a slam the ring back in his face, go away, I hate you. It was, this isn't going to work. This is not going to be good for either one of us. The very interesting thing on that to me was that she got a lot of flack from her friends. I can't believe you'd do that to him. I feel so bad for him. How could you ever? And she said, but now if we got married and we got divorced, what would you be saying to me? Well, we'd feel bad that you, yeah. But I'm trying to do something because I think this will not work out well. She said, we're Christians, we'd stay married. She said, but I don't think we'd stay married happily. And I was so amazed by the comments that she got from people. How could you possibly do this to him? And she finally said, I'm doing this for him as much as I'm doing it for me. And I was real proud of her for being able to step back. Most young girls, you get a date and a dress and a ring, and they're going to march down that aisle no matter what. And I was very proud of her for being able to make that decision, because I know it wasn't easy for her, and she certainly didn't get help from her friends. Okay, where are we? I've lost track. What time is it?
Word fitly spoken.
Okay. We just... admiration is a very basic need of every man. That's a big generalization too, but it is probably a very, very true statement. Men have a different set of feelings in their ego. They need to feel, and this is a God-given drive, they need to feel responsible and like they're doing well for their family. And we're so blessed that they're given that need to feel that way, because that allows us to say, you're in charge. You're the head. You do this. If they didn't have that innate sense of need, then we'd all be in a big muddle. But because they do, it's really important that we remind them that we see what they're doing for us, that we respect what they're doing. I don't know how many of y'all have worked outside the home. It's tough. It's a tough place to be. People are mean. And they don't care if they hurt your feelings. And that's what he's dealing with all the time, even if you're not having to. And I will just do an aside here. I got real tired when I was a stay-home mommy of people saying, you are so lucky that you get to stay home with your kids. No. It has nothing to do with luck. It has to do with a decision, a financial decision that we made, that I would stay home. And I was out of the workforce for about 15 years, and it impacted a whole lot of things now. It impacted my retirement. But it was an important thing for our children. So I don't have much... I get annoyed. People say, you're so lucky. Mm-mm. No, it's not luck. Luck doesn't have anything to do with it. Now, are there times when it's not possible at all and that both people have to work so that you can feed your children? Yeah. But feeding your children is not the same as having new flat screens in every bedroom. So I'm a big proponent of staying home with your kids. Mm-hmm. I don't see any reason to have a child and farm them out for other people to bring up, especially if you've ever looked at the daycare industry, and I've worked in it for years. I used to go out and observe where my students were going to go to work, and I'd see them and see them in action. And my goal was to go to every childcare facility in our 5-county service region. I never got to all of them. But I'd go to about 2, and I'd come back and put my head on my desk, because they're awful. Good ones are less awful. But if you think about, if somebody that you knew had quadruplets, everybody in their life would be going, how can we help? What can we do? When can we be there? When can? Do you know in the state of Texas you can have 5 babies for one person and 10 babies in a room if you have 2 people? A very, very, very good child care facility will have 4 babies to one person. But you won't find that.
I can take one-on-one.
And some people are handing their infants over. It used to, and I'm sorry I'm getting on this teacher thing, but I can't help it. In the state of Texas, you used to not be able to take children to child care until they were 18 months old. They weren't licensed for them under that age. Now they can be 6 weeks old, 2 weeks old in some cases. And so you take this baby who isn't attached to anybody yet, and you send them away for 12 hours a day. Oh, by the way, I've been to daycare centers that have a sign that say, we will not keep your child longer than 12 hours. Because there are people who want that, too. And you've got four babies in a room. Five, usually. And you've got 10, because they put them... You can do that. You can have a group size of 10 infants. And then every time they get a different birthday, they move to a different class, so they have a different teacher and different people. I always tell my students, if I made you change houses and spouses every time you had a birthday, you wouldn't be very well adjusted either. Anyway, don't get me started on daycare.
But things do change fast. When I worked until our son was born, it never even occurred to me that I would leave him with somebody else.
And I would. Yeah. Work. And again, I understand that there are times when it's absolutely critical and the children aren't going to be fed if both parents aren't working. So I'm not saying that it's always universal. And if, and I've worked in a lot of programs with very, very poor children, if mom's a crack addict, it's better that the baby's not there and that the baby's somewhere else. So there are times that it's a better situation. But for the most part, God intended for moms to take care of their kids. He always knows how it's right.
I also think, though, if I ever have to work and my kids, you know, I have kids and I have to work, they're not going to a daycare. I will figure out something, aunt, grandma, something, because I've worked in a preschool for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And
the best
it's
ones
a
are,
good facility.
Yeah,
but
the best ones aren't very
you
good.
You always have those bad apples of teachers, and mm-hmm. my kids will never be talked to that way, not right. by them for no right. reason, just because they're having a bad day.
Yeah, but you really do have to carefully consider that other option. I mean, I know a lot of people say, well, I'll work and somebody else will take care of them. And that can happen, and I did work when my kids were little because Randy left. And so, you know, there were some not choices there. But I love having my grandbabies. I don't want to bring them up. I brought up my kids. I'm 60 years old. I don't want to bring up a kid every day.
Yeah.
So, would I do it if my children needed it? Sure. Needed it.
Well,
would I do it because my kids want more stuff?
And no. That's the big problem these days, I think.
I think it's always been the problem.
More so than needing to eat.
Well, I do believe most people say we want to live this lifestyle.
Exactly.
But that's not a new problem. Human beings have always been... lured by gold and silver. Yeah. Okay, we'll work on some more on chapter 3 next time. We need to get 3 more. Sorry.